Chapter 25. The usual entanglement and noise of carts, drays, omnibuses, wagons, and foot passengers, but the misfortune that had fallen on the wooden midshipman made it strange and new. Houses and shops were different from what they used to be, and bore Mr. Brogley's warrant on their fronts in large characters. The broker seemed to have got hold of the very churches, for their spires rose into the sky with an unwonted air. Even the sky itself was changed, and had an execution in it plainly. Captain Cuttle lived on the brink of a little canal near the India docks, where there was a swivel bridge which opened now and then to let some wandering monster of a ship come roaming up the street like a stranded leviathan. The gradual change from land to water, on the approach to Captain Cuttle's lodgings, was curious. It began with the erection of flagstaffs, as appurtenances to public houses, then came slop sellers' shops, with Guernsey shirts, sou'wester hats, and canvas pantaloons, at once the tightest and the loosest of their order, hanging up outside. These were succeeded by anchor and chain cable forges, where sledgehammers were dinging upon iron all day long. Then came rows of houses, with little vane-surmounted masts uprearing themselves from among the scarlet beans. Then, ditches. Then, pollard willows. Then, more ditches. Then, unaccountable patches of dirty water, hardly to be descried, for the ships that covered them. Then, the air was perfumed with chips, and all other trades were swallowed up in mast, ore, and block-making, and boat-building. Then, the ground grew marshy and unsettled. Then, there was nothing to be smelt but rum and sugar. Then, Captain Cuttle's lodgings, at once a first floor and a top story, in Brig Plus were close before you. The captain was one of those timber-looking men, suits of oak as well as hearts, whom it is almost impossible for the liveliest imagination to separate from any part of their dress, however insignificant. Accordingly, when Walter knocked at the door, and the captain instantly poked his head out of one of his little front windows, and hailed him, with the hard-glared hat already on it, and the shirt collar like a sail, and the white suit of blue, all standing as usual, Walter was as fully persuaded that he was always in that state, as if the captain had been a bird, and those had been his feathers. "Waller, my lad," apostrophe said Captain Cuttle. "Stand by and knock again. Hard. It's washing day." Apostrophe, Walter, in his impatience, gave a prodigious thump with the knocker. "Hard it is." Apostrophe, said Captain Cuttle, and immediately drew in his head, as if he expected a squall. Nor was he mistaken. For a widow lady, with her sleeves rolled up to her shoulders, and her arms frothy with soapsuds and smoking with hot water, replied to the summons with startling rapidity. Before she looked at Walter, she looked at the knocker, and then, measuring him with her eyes from head to foot, said she wondered he had left any of it. "Captain Cuttle's at home, I know," apostrophe said Walter with a conciliatory smile. "Is he?" Apostrophe, replied the widow lady. "Indeed. Apostrophe, he has just been speaking to me," apostrophe said Walter, in breathless explanation. "Has he?" Apostrophe, replied the widow lady. "Then perhaps you'll give him Mrs. McStinger's respects, and say that the next time he lowers himself and his lodgings, by talking out of the winder, she'll thank him to come down and open the door to." Apostrophe, Mrs. McStinger spoke loud, and listened for any observations that might be offered from the first floor. "I'll mention it," apostrophe said Walter, "if you'll have the goodness to let me in, ma'am." Apostrophe, for he was repelled by a wooden fortification extending across the doorway, and put there to prevent the little McStingers in their moments of recreation from tumbling down the steps. "A boy that can knock my door down," apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger, contemptuously, "can get over that, I should hope." Apostrophe, but Walter, taking this as a permission to enter, and getting over it, Mrs. McStinger immediately demanded whether an Englishwoman's house was her castle or not, and whether she was to be broken upon by wrath. Apostrophe on these subjects, her thirst for information was still very importunate, when Walter, having made his way up the little staircase through an artificial fog occasioned by the washing, which covered the banisters with a clammy perspiration, entered Captain Cuttle's room, and found that gentleman in ambush behind the door. "Never owed her a penny, Waller," apostrophe said Captain Cuttle, in a low voice, and with visible marks of trepidation on his countenance. "Done her a world of good turns, and the children too. Vixen at times, though. Whew!" "Apostrophe, I should go away, Captain Cuttle," apostrophe said Walter. "Durstn't do it, Waller," apostrophe returned the captain. "She'd find me out, wherever I went. Sit down. How's Gills?" Apostrophe, the captain was dining in his hat, off cold loin of mutton, porter, and some smoking hot potatoes, which he had cooked himself, and took out of a little saucepan before the fire as he wanted them. He unscrewed his hook at dinner time, and screwed a knife into its wooden socket instead, with which he had already begun to peel one of these potatoes for Walter. His rooms were very small, and strongly impregnated with tobacco smoke, but snug enough. Everything being stowed away, as if there were an earthquake regularly every half hour. "How's Gills?" Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the captain. Walter, who had by this time recovered his breath, and lost his spirits or such temporary spirits as his rapid journey had given him, looked at his questioner for a moment, said, "Oh, Captain Cuttle!" apostrophe apostrophe and burst into tears. No words can describe the captain's consternation at this sight. Mrs. McStinger faded into nothing before it. He dropped the potato and the fork, and would have dropped the knife too, if he could, and sat gazing at the boy, as if he expected to hear next moment that a gulf had opened in the city, which had swallowed up his old friend, coffee-colored suit, buttons, chronometer, spectacles, and all. But when Walter told him what was really the matter, Captain Cuttle, after a moment's reflection, started up into full activity. He emptied out of a little tin canister on the top shelf of the cupboard his whole stock of ready money amounting to 13 pounds and half a crown, which he transferred to one of the pockets of his square blue coat, further enriched that repository with the contents of his plate chest, consisting of two withered atomies of teaspoons, and an obsolete pair of knock-kneed sugar tongs, pulled up his immense double-cased silver watch from the depths in which it reposed, to assure himself that that valuable was sound and whole, reattached the hook to his right wrist, and seizing the stick covered over with knobs, bade Walter come along. Remembering, however, in the midst of his virtuous excitement, that Mrs. McStinger might be lying in wait below, Captain Cuttle hesitated at last, not without glancing at the window, as if he had some thoughts of escaping by that unusual means of egress, rather than encounter his terrible enemy. He decided, however, in favor of stratagem. "Waller," apostrophe said the captain, with a timid wink, "go afore, my lad. Sing out, goodbye, Captain Cuttle, when you're in the passage, and shut the door. Then wait at the corner of the street till you see me." These directions were not issued without a previous knowledge of the enemy's tactics, for when Walter got downstairs, Mrs. McStinger glided out of the little back kitchen, like an avenging spirit. But not gliding out upon the captain, as she had expected, she merely made a further allusion to the knocker, and glided in again. Some 5 minutes elapsed before Captain Cuttle could summon courage to attempt his escape, for Walter waited so long at the street corner, looking back at the house, before there were any symptoms of the hard glazed hat. At length the captain burst out of the door with the suddenness of an explosion, and coming towards him at a great pace, and never once looking over his shoulder, pretended, as soon as they were well out of the street, to whistle a tune. "Uncle Much hove down, Waller?" apostrophe apostrophe inquired the captain, as they were walking along. "I am afraid so. If you had seen him this morning, you would never have forgotten it. apostrophe, walk fast, Waller, my lad, apostrophe, returned the captain, mending his pace, and walk the same all the days of your life. Overhaul the catechism for that advice, and keep it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the captain was too busy with his own thoughts of Solomon Gills, mingled perhaps with some reflections on his late escape from Mrs. McStinger, to offer any further quotations on the way for Walter's moral improvement. They interchanged no other word until they arrived at Old Sol's door, where the unfortunate wooden midshipman, with his instrument at his eye, seemed to be surveying the whole horizon in search of some friend to help him out of his difficulty. Gills, apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain, hurrying into the back parlor and taking him by the hand quite tenderly. Lay your head well to the wind, and we'll fight through it. All you've got to do, apostrophe, said the captain, with the solemnity of a man who was delivering himself of one of the most precious practical tenets ever discovered by human wisdom, is to lay your head well to the wind, and we'll fight through it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Old Sol returned the pressure of his hand, and thanked him. Captain Cuttle then, with a gravity suitable to the nature of the occasion, put down upon the table the 2 teaspoons and the sugar tongs, the silver watch, and the ready money, and asked Mr. Brogley, the broker, what the damage was. Come, what do you make of it? Apostrophe, said Captain Cuttle. Why, Lord help you! Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the broker. You don't suppose that property's of any use, do you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the captain. Why? The amount's 370-odd, apostrophe, replied the broker. Never mind, apostrophe, returned the captain, though he was evidently dismayed by the figures. All's fish that comes to your net, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, apostrophe, said Mr. Brogley. But sprats ain't whales, you know. Apostrophe, the philosophy of this observation seemed to strike the captain. He ruminated for a minute, eyeing the broker, meanwhile, as a deep genius, and then called the instrument maker aside. Gills, apostrophe, said Captain Cuttle, what's the bearings of this business? Who's the creditor? Apostrophe, hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the old man. Come away. Don't speak before Wally. It's a matter of security for Wally's father and old bond. I've paid a good deal of it, Ned, but the times are so bad with me that I can't do more just now. I've foreseen it, but I couldn't help it. Not a word before Wally, for all the world. Apostrophe, you've got some money, haven't you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered the captain. Yes, yes, oh yes, I've got some, apostrophe, returned Old Sol, first putting his hands into his empty pockets, and then squeezing his Welsh wig between them, as if he thought he might wring some gold out of it. But the little I have got isn't convertible, Ned. It can't be got at. I have been trying to do something with it for Wally, and I'm old-fashioned, and behind the time. It's here and there, and, in short, it's as good as nowhere, apostrophe, said the old man, looking in bewilderment about him. He had so much the air of a half-witted person who had been hiding his money in a variety of places, and had forgotten where, that the captain followed his eyes, not without a faint hope that he might remember some few hundred pounds concealed up the chimney, or down in the cellar. But Solomon Gills knew better than that. I'm behind the time altogether, my dear Ned, apostrophe, said Sol, in resigned despair, a long way. It's no use my lagging on so far behind it. The stock had better be sold, it's worth more than this debt, and I had better go and die somewhere, on the balance. I haven't any energy left. I don't understand things. This had better be the end of it. Let 'em sell the stock, and take him down, apostrophe, said the old man, pointing feebly to the wooden midshipman, and let us both be broken up together. Apostrophe, and what do you mean to do with Waller? Apostrophe, said the captain. There, there. Sit ye down, Gills, sit ye down, and let me think o' this. If I weren't a man on a small annuity that was large enough till today, I hadn't need to think of it. But you only lay your head well to the wind, apostrophe said the captain, again administering that unanswerable piece of consolation, and you're all right. Apostrophe apostrophe, old soul thanked him from his heart, and went and laid it against the back parlor fireplace instead. Captain Cuttle walked up and down the shop for some time, cogitating profoundly, and bringing his bushy black eyebrows to bear so heavily on his nose, like clouds setting on a mountain, that Walter was afraid to offer any interruption to the current of his reflections. Mr. Brogley, who was averse to being any constraint upon the party, and who had an ingenious cast of mind, went, softly whistling, among the stock, rattling weather glasses, shaking compasses as if they were physic, catching up keys with lodestones, looking through telescopes, endeavoring to make himself acquainted with the use of the globes, setting parallel rulers astride onto his nose, and amusing himself with other philosophical transactions. Waller. Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain at last. I've got it. Apostrophe, have you, Captain Cuttle? Apostrophe apostrophe cried Walter, with great animation. Come this way, my lad, apostrophe said the captain. The stock's the security. I'm another. Your governor's the man to advance money. Apostrophe, Mr. Domney. Apostrophe, apostrophe, faltered Walter. The captain nodded gravely. Look at him, apostrophe, he said. Look at Gills. If they was to sell off these things now, he'd die of it. You know he would. We mustn't leave a stone unturned, and there's a stone for you. Apostrophe, a stone. Mr. Domney. Apostrophe, faltered Walter. You run round to the office, first of all, and see if he's there, apostrophe said Captain Cuttle, clapping him on the back. Quick. Apostrophe, Walter felt he must not dispute the command. A glance at his uncle would have determined him, if he had felt otherwise, and disappeared to execute it. He soon returned, out of breath, to say that Mr. Domney was not there. It was Saturday, and he had gone to Brighton. I tell you what, Waller. Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain, who seemed to have prepared himself for this contingency in his absence. We'll go to Brighton. I'll back you, my boy. I'll back you, Waller. We'll go to Brighton by the afternoon's coach. Apostrophe, if the application must be made to Mr. Domney at all, which was awful to think of, Walter felt that he would rather prefer it alone and unassisted, than backed by the personal influence of Captain Cuttle, to which he hardly thought Mr. Domney would attach much weight. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.